everyone. Welcome back to Rewatchable. We're up to episode 117 on our rewatch of The Legend of Korra. We're doing season two now, or book two, episodes one and two, Rebel Spirit and the Southern Lights. So starting off a new season, I am your host this week, Natalie. I haven't been on in a couple of weeks because I've been traveling, but hopefully you've had a good time with Caitlin and with everyone else that was hanging out on the show in the past couple of weeks. So this week we have me, as I said, hosting. I'm a super fan of Korra. We've got Caitlin and Mitch, who are both also super fans of Korra. To the best of my knowledge, they were super fans for Avatar, so I'm assuming everyone's on the same page there. And Ariana, who is our newbie this week. So yes, I don't think this particular group has had a combination in a while, if ever. So hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh my gosh, this is like the Glee Chat plus me episode. Sort of like we had like the Not Another Teen Wolf podcast plus me episode a few weeks back.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, because the other week we had me, I think, we had me, Donya, Karen, and Ariana, which was, Teen Wolf plus Ariana. Ariana's just our plus one everywhere. It's great. Yes. If you want to get in touch with us to talk about the podcast, to talk about future or past episodes, you can reach us on our email, which is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can comment on this post over on hyperball.com, our parent site, or you can join us on Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can leave feedback to be read out on a future episode, or you can talk about one of the past shows that we've done, whatever you like, really. We do try to be spoiler-free going forward because we do have people watching the show with us that have never watched it before, so that would be the only thing. No major spoilers for the serious future. But yeah, getting straight in to a new season of Legend of Korra, book two. It seems like it's come quite quickly because the seasons are quite short. But Ariana wrote this week's synopsis, so I know that you'll all love hearing her read it out loud.
Yes, so I'm Ariana. I know we got a message earlier this week that it's kind of hard to tell us apart based on just our voices, so I want to be really clear that I'm the host that sounds kind of like an animated mouse. So now that you know that, our first synopsis is for Rebel Spirit, Chapter 1. In this chapter, Korra is being a little dick. You'd think that losing all of her powers last season would give her a dose of humble pie, but no, she still has major only child syndrome and insists on cheating at sports against 8-year-olds. She yells at her parents and throws tantrums in front of her boyfriend. In other words, Korra has no chill. Meanwhile, Asami's life is like totally a disaster, but it's fine. Her fabulous hair is hiding a brilliant brain and tenacious spirit. Mako's still a tool, but at least he means well, sort of. Bolin discovers his bisexuality. And of course, Katara's kids all show up to remind us that old gang over new crew. And then Katara guilts them into spending time together because she is a master manipulator and Sokka is dead. So,
and Sokka is dead.
Yeah.
All of boils down to that. Sokka's dead.
You think if he wasn't dead, we wouldn't be having these problems?
I mean, I think so. I feel like having, like, Uncle Sokka there would help out a lot.
Yeah.
We'd probably have a lot less, like, I don't know if we would have Nobumi, because that role's pretty much filled with Sokka in the original series.
Well, I think Nobumi was definitely influenced by Uncle Sokka in his upbringing, you know.
Yeah.
Uncle Sokka might have been Nobumi's primary caretaker or something, given his personality.
What I realized watching the three of them together, it reminded me very much of like old school Sokka, Katara, and Aang. Like when they first started out, they have that kind of dynamic.
Yeah, it is an interesting, the kids are, you know, the Aang's actual children are one of my favorite things about the show, and it is interesting, and that I think it must have been quite hard to, like, get them right, like, to have their own personalities as well as sort of echoing that. And obviously Tenzin isn't quite like Aang, but there is a whole thing going on there, and they're actually around quite a bit this season, which is fun. But going straight in, so the episode, this is actually picking up 6 months after we, you know, blew up the bloodbenders in a boat, which I hope everyone was fine with that happening. Bit of a weird ending to the season. So did you guys expect such a time jump, I suppose? Like, or when you were first watching, obviously we've only got one newbie this week, but just when everyone first saw this, because obviously Atla went straight from, it was just 3 months worth of, you know, or 6 months, however long it took them to get to the summer solstice, all the way through. So this has actually been a big time jump where, I guess, you know, Marco and Cora doing the do all over and being all popular, and now they're kind of over it. And all everyone else is, like, they're doing things, they're traveling around. So, yeah, time jump, basically. Mitch, when you first watched it, were you sort of surprised by that?
Yeah, you know, I can remember this specific moment that I first saw this episode at San Diego Comic-Con, not knowing anything of this season whatsoever. And it jumps in, I think, with, like, you know, the Cora's twin cousins, and then it comes in with, like, them, like, Cora and Mako being so in their ship. And those two things felt so jarring to me because it felt like a whole other ballpark and a lot more romance, honestly, than more than I preferred. That's straight up going to be my beef with this season. The romance becomes a little bit too out of hand. Like in the first book, yeah, it was kind of ridiculous with this Asami, Mako, Cora stuff and Bolin too. But I think it gets even weirder this season, and I'm just so not into it.
Ariana, how about you? Like, given your sort of experience with the show so far, were you sort of expecting it to pick up right where we left off, or were you sort of surprised about this?
It was weird because, like, usually I just skip through whatever the announcer's saying because, obviously, I watched the episode before that. But this time I, had to go back and I was like, wait, like, actual stuff happened. I need to make sure I'm paying attention. And I was like, wow, everything has changed. And then we start the actual episode, and Cora, I'm like, wow, you have not changed at all. Even though you had this traumatizing event, you are still being, like, a little dick to Tenzin. What is wrong with you? But whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. It's really weird. You'd think it would have, like, made her, you know, not become so impatient and terrible, but what are you going to do? One of the things that we also learn in the flashback is that the council was disbanded and that they've got a president instead of a council. So a single president instead of, like, you know, they had the council from, like, earth and air and southern water, northern water, fire. Yeah, so Caitlin, how do you feel about, like, a supreme overlord president rather than a council? Good plan, bad plan?
Well, it hasn't worked out for a lot of the places we've seen before, so potentially not a great idea, and we didn't really see all that much of it being relevant other than Tenzin has time to go on a vacation and be Tenzin. Vacation Tenzin, yeah. But likely it will become relevant later.
Yeah.
Speculation.
I bet the president is like a bad guy, and he has total control over everybody, so
he's controlling the spirits.
Oh, yeah. No, I know who's controlling the spirits, and I have my theories, guys. I'm right about this one. I wasn't right about evil Asami, but I'm right this time.
There's still time for Asami to be evil. You never know. So
she is the spirits, guys. That's why she's so beautiful, because she just is the spirits.
Isn't that nice? Wow.
She's a goddess.
That's so deep.
So, in a minute, we're going to talk about how Cora was almost totally, like, UA 2.0, Princess of the North, but we'll get there in a second, because, first of all, we see that now that she can airbend, like, yay, save my boyfriend, airbending, so now she's using those very important spiritual moves to basically take down children in a game that they invented when she is 10 to 15 years older than them, so that's cool. I don't know, like, why would you feel that was necessary? Like, why would you feel like, okay, I'm playing with kids, and yeah, I might beat them or I might not, but I am going to use my special avatar state powers to actually give myself a boost and feel some sort of sick victory about smashing the hopes and dreams of children. I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, I sort of do, in that I think that
the oldest child is a fourth grader. I mean, I feel like this is really tacky, Cora.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's the point. I think that, like, I'd like sort of some ideas of why they're showing us this, but I think that they're showing us this on purpose, basically to show, to really hammer home Cora's lack of sort of connection with spirituality. Like, just because she can do the avatar state doesn't mean that she has any respect for it. And just because she can now airbend doesn't mean she has any respect for it. And, you know, and so, you know, she thinks that she's mastered everything, but it's like, oh, dealing with spirits, now you're in over your head again. So that was sort of my take on it. But, yeah, Caitlin, how did you feel about the battling of children? Where, you know, do you think it was, like, a nice move, like, showing that, you know, they're all equals together because the kids are all master airbenders? Or, like, was it a dick move?
I mean, I read it as a very sibling-like move. Like, she's kind of been adopted into that family, and that's very much how, if she were blood-related to them, an older sibling might react and act with their younger siblings if they're running around. And, I mean, the fact that she uses the Avatar state to do it's pretty unnecessary, but, like, the behavior itself, I felt, just was very sibling-y.
She could die and send the entire world into chaos if she died in the Avatar state.
True, like, that she died playing scooter ball in the Avatar state. I'm trying to think if we ever saw Aang. We definitely saw him playing with his powers, but I'm trying to see if we ever saw him playing with, like, the Avatar state or anything spiritual like that kind of thing.
He used the Avatar state when they were, like, in dire need of help.
Well, he was the spiritual Avatar, and so he had respect for that, and Korra doesn't, as his polar opposite.
I mean, often at times, if we will, I know it's kind of hard to classify types of bending, a la it's hard to classify people by their house of Hogwarts, but I feel like Korra doesn't come off as a waterbender in that aspect. I feel that airbenders are very spiritual. I'm not really sure what to call waterbenders, but as far as what I think Korra is, I think she's more of like a firebender type personality. Like, it would make sense to me if she grew up in the Fire Nation with her cocky attitude and her lack of care for the spiritual world. Like, just think about
it. She reminds me the most of Toph.
Yeah, I would have said Earth as well. But a good friend of mine once said to me quite a long time ago, it's something he wrote on a blog and it sort of stuck with me for a long time, and he says it all the time, assholes cross all boundaries. So there are, you know,
Peter Pettigrew, there you go.
Maybe we're being too harsh on Korra in general, but she's certainly, for an adult woman, you know, like, or an almost adult woman, given the responsibility of the world and having gone through a major, major risk and trauma and losing her powers and getting them back, she doesn't seem to have come out the other side of that learning all that much, except more arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can do anything else, you know?
I guess that's true. She's like, I'm so great, I saved the world once, even though she didn't really.
How about Marco? Like, so they're dating now, apparently, for 6 months. But, like, him and Asami didn't even really break up. They're like, sorry about what happened between us, like, whatever. You know, and then it was just like, oh, you know, now we have to deal with Korra and Marco being together. And by this point, apparently they've had their honeymoon period and they're kind of bickering and they're kind of weird to each other. So do you guys feel like Marco was doing anything particularly wrong or annoying? No. Or is it just sort of in contrast to Korra, you know, is he seeming reasonable in contrast to Korra being extreme, or is he still annoying too? Caitlin, how are you about him at this point?
I mean, I found him surprisingly likable in these two episodes, like the whole thing where he like arrests the guys and like had the quip that he wrote down, like that cracked
me
up.
I like it too. I think it's that's when I was like, oh my gosh, Marco, you're still annoying, I can't believe you did that. But
I just felt hilarious and just so dweeby, so I was like, it was a little endearing to me that he was like that ridiculous. And I thought he was being pretty reasonable trying to deal with Korra, and she was not having really anything he wanted to say, but I didn't really have a problem with him in these two episodes.
You know, it's funny, now that we have Marco the cop, I always, from now on, think of him quite literally as Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker. Like, they are to the T the same character to me. And I can't unsee it once I see it.
Oh my gosh.
Like, the arguments he has with his Mary Jane, Korra, like, when they're hanging out on top of Naga. Those are the same arguments Tobey Maguire would have with Kirsten Dunst. It's crazy.
I cannot even remember those movies clearly enough to know if this comparison is accurate or not.
No, but I get it, like, how Tobey Maguire, like, turned into a tool after he was Spider-Man. He was, like, all cocky and stuff. Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like Marco is still, like, just as lame as he was last season, but now he, like, looks a lot better because Korra's being mean to him for, like, no reason. Like, he's trying to help, and she's just like, oh my god, I'm so over you. Like, why are we still together?
Sucks. Yeah, she's like, I don't know, randomly being mean to him and Tenzin. I don't understand Korra in this first episode at all.
Moving from there being teenage boys, she's being a teenage girl.
She's horrible to Tenzin, and I can't deal with it. But
it's all bad. Nothing's good. Even her father, who's trying to protect her from a man, That's the most I'll say there. can we just call him our next slime bender? Is that cool? Are we there yet?
What?
This guy.
I feel like that's a spoiler.
Not spoiling anything from the fact that I, as a newbie, when I first watched this, hated the hell out of him because he was taking Cora away from her loving father, and I hate that Cora.
If you're talking about, no, it's very obvious that he's the antagonist. Like it's okay. There in the episode, Mitch. Like okay. It's not. I don't think we're hiding that. Like it's very whether he's right or wrong.
Well, cat's
like,
out of the bag. I wasn't saying that much.
No. That's not what I mean. Whether he's evil or not,
no.
The antagonism is the separation. Like there is that, and he has. We know he has beef with the brother. Like whether that guy is bad or not is not the question, uh-huh. And that's not something
he's like
we know
the Tarlac.
Yet.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, it's an antagonist. Yeah, it's an antagonist for the situation, regardless of whether they're like objectively evil or not, and that's obvious so far.
Well, Ariana, do you have like any other thoughts about Unalaq?
Cannot remember these waterbenders' names. They all have like the same name.
Those are cute. Yeah, Unalaq is Korra's uncle, and he's the father to the twins.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's controlling the spirits and making them come up and be bad so he can get more control. Sort of like how Tarlac was like trying to manipulate things so he could get more control. But I think that it went back like as far back as with his brother, like 20 years ago or whatever. I think that he like made the spirits come up to make his brother have to leave and like make his brother look bad.
Yeah. I mean, so you think he's that evil? Not like he's one of those weird, like, religious people who think that they've got the right idea, but that they're actually gross.
I wouldn't say he's, like, evil. I think that he's, like, the antagonist we had last season, where he thinks he's right. Like, he's like, this is for the betterment of everybody. Like, people need to be more spiritual. Yeah, he's, like, a religious fanatic.
So I'm going to manipulate this so people think that, you know, so he's going to be like, God told me you guys have to do this.
Yeah.
We'll give you this much, Ariana. I do find it difficult to differentiate between Tarlac and Unalaq specifically because I feel like both of them have like the three ponytail thing going on, even if they don't. And they just, even their character build is fairly similar. And their like voice actor is, and their names are, I don't know, both with a Q.
They're like the same thing.
And they're both waterbenders. And it just starts to feel like they wear the same costume almost. It's like, it really starts to like feel one hit, one note here. And I'm not sure if that's a complaint with any other super fans that have already seen the show of why they did or didn't like book two. I know for me that eventually things will get better, but I don't like the beginning of the season because it does feel like we just got off of this Tarlac high and now we're coming into Unalaq and it's like, this is the same note. We were just here.
So far, I don't like it just because Cora is being like so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, obviously, I love Tenzin, and I want her to stop being mean to him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't deserve it. He's, like, hanging out with Pema after all these years, like, cringing through it, and he's just trying to, like, do an important thing in life. He can't get anything good in life.
Pema. My God.
Because he has...
Yeah, Pema has the worst time of it, obviously.
Because, like, think about it. Like, he's just trying to follow his father's legacy so bad that he can't even live his own life. He can't love the woman he wants to, Lin, and he can't train the next avatar because she doesn't even like him. It's like, poor Tenzin. He's the real martyr of the story.
And then his brother and sister always picking on him.
I know. I relate so much to Tenzin. It's ridiculous.
Holy shit. Okay. Asami and Bolin team up in this episode, which is new and fun. They're quite cute. They go off. Asami's trying to make her business, like, have a reputation again, which is nice, I guess. Good for her. So she's still cool. Anyone have any thoughts about Asami this episode?
I
like that she's proactive. I like that she's proactive, and she's definitely like the nicest. I mean, not nicest is like the wrong word. She's like the most mature out of all.
She's like quite healthy and mature, and she makes good choices and has a brain.
Because of that, she's like a little bit boring right now, but.
Wow. Just boring me because she's well adjusted.
Yeah. Angst, please.
Bring on the drama. I mean, you know, that's television, I guess. But the episode opens with Bolin. He's clearly trying to keep his 5 minutes of fame as a fire ferret going, you know, trying to get them to keep going with some newbies in the team. It doesn't go so well, but. How did you, Caitlin, how did you feel about I guess Asami and Bolin meeting Varric. That was this episode, right? Not the next one. I haven't mixed it up in my head.
It was this episode. This episode.
Yeah. How do we feel about that whole Varric situation? Is he evil? Is he good? Is he fun? Or do we hate him?
Oh my god, he's so ridiculous. He's so ridiculous.
And he reminds me so much of someone that I can't place. Like another character that's like this.
Sue Sylvester.
No!
Wait, what? Who?
Glee's Sue Sylvester.
No, who is like Sue Sylvester?
Varric.
Varric.
Who's that?
Guy that Asami went to meet.
That's what I've always seen. He's like...
The like flamboyant tradesman.
Right.
I like him. He's funny.
Because like, he has that whole like Donald Trump, you're fired thing going on. And...
Stop. He is not like Donald Trump.
He fired that guy for existing.
That's
those are such Sue Sylvester qualities. Just firing someone because you don't like them and expecting everyone to lie to you to make you feel better.
He was mad that the guy was lying to him to make him feel better.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Why he fired him?
Yeah.
Bolin was the only one who was like, you're not floating. I
like, you're a straight shooter. I like that.
I like when he's like, we're going to hammer out the deal, but first, and like gets right in Asami's face. And she's like, what is going on?
Her eyes. Oh, yeah.
Shout out to Asami's face in that stare off. Oh, I'm going to say. So good.
I love Asami.
You know, it's funny, too, because during that scene, I'm trying to... now pinpoint where I feel the animation might be different from the different studios. I think this is the first episode it is. And
I noticed it. It's not as good.
So their faces look weird, right?
Well, they just look more... this is going to sound silly, because obviously they are. But I was like, it looks more two-dimensional to me.
And I know, do you notice that when Varric's on top of Asami's face and they look like...
No, I noticed it for Asami... Like, the first thing I noticed was Asami's face. I was like, it's not as pretty as it was last season.
I know.
Oh, my God! So... And then Korra's eyes are, like, not as realistic. They look more cartoony. They look like the old school. Like, they look like Atla eyes.
Mm-hmm. Like Powerpuff Girls. The real Powerpuff Girls.
That moment in the race, when the kids were racing, where they had... Yeah, some of the motion as well is different, like, I think. But I don't know... I cannot say I look closely enough to be able to pinpoint all of these moments like Mitch does, though. The most exciting thing, I think, for us, at least, was the gang kids being there. Not just Boomy, who we saw at the very end of season one. We also meet sexy Kaya, who's like a waterbender, and she's got high hair, and she's like really cool, and I love her. And so we have a lot of this episode of them basically giving Tenzin shit about his plans to take Korra around the world and
vacation Tenzin.
Yes. So that's really cute.
It was so nice to see Tenzin like regress to his like he does that child. With Katara too, but like where he's just like he's so grumpy.
Yeah.
Did I hear you say you hated Kaya, Ariana?
No, I said I love her.
Oh, okay, good.
Why would anyone hate her?
You're gonna have some issues with me if you don't like Kaya. She's one of my main bays over here.
Yeah. Yeah, she's great. Yeah, so it's a shame that Brittany can't be here for the proper introduction of New Boomy.
Oh.
But never mind. Ariana, what was your first impression of, I guess, the gang's children, or Aang's other two children, the older children than Tenzin, and how they treat him?
Oh, well, first of all, obviously I was devastated that we didn't get to see that television show. That's all I want, is the gang kid television show. And then I thought, how fun that they're so, like, the way that they tease Tenzin, because obviously he's so, like, uptight and, like, and they're not. I mean, probably because he had, like, the weight of the entire Air Nation on his shoulders. But his brother and sister are much more, they've got a lot more Sokka in them, and they're like, woo! And then it made me think, I really want to see them interact with Lin. That's, like, what I'm hoping for. That's all I want now. Because I'm sure their dynamic is funny.
Yeah. Caitlin, how about you? When they first came back into the show, what were you sort of expecting? Or were you expecting to see, like, more of the, you know, the prior generation's children, or more, like, links to the prior generation so soon? Or what were you sort of expecting from these characters?
I don't know that I had any expectations going in about them, but Boomy definitely fits his namesake a lot. So that name is clearly fitting for him. And Kaya is gorgeous, so quality there. So very much enjoyment seeing both of them. And
she's
it just
like
makes
Katara
me want
to... with an edge.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's way sexier than Katara could ever be, FYI.
It
sorry.
Feels like she's
or
like
Fire Nation Katara.
Oh.
Yeah, right. Maybe. That's what I was about to say. Yeah, she feels like... honestly, she feels like what Katara and Zuko's baby would
oh,
look like.
Nice.
I had to. She really does,
she's
though.
She's a love child.
She just has that look to her. Like she's
not an airbender, so she could be the love child.
And she has that. Yes, she could. And she has like this suave to her that's kind of just like hair toss, whatever.
You know what? That's never love suave. So
you know what? If Aang did make Tenzin break up with Lin so that he could impregnate some like non-bender to be sure that the kids would be airbenders, he should have done the same thing. He should have broken up with Katara and impregnated some non-airbender. What a hypocrite. Like, what a jerk.
That's what I've been saying. It's not fair.
Well, that's why we were able to have our Zutara baby, because he was like, hey, like, I didn't do this right. I know you left Zuko all this time. Please, like, have at least one with him. That doesn't solve his problem because he still didn't get.
I hope
really
anyone just tuning in does know that we've literally made all of this up, and we don't know for sure that Aang forced Tenzin, you know, to break up with Lin in order to have more airbender babies.
Like, but didn't he?
I don't know anything. I have 3 seasons of not knowing anything coming up, but I feel like Aang didn't force that on Tenzin. I think that Tenzin probably, like, after Aang died, he was like, "Oh shoot, like the clock is really ticking."
Oh, you think he forced it on himself?
Yeah, I feel like he's definitely the kind of person who would put that kind of pressure on himself.
Because I have to marry the princess of this other country, even though I'm in love with the stable boy for duty, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah,
he's that kind of person.
Is Katara Aang's stable boy? That's kind of cute.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of princesses and stable boys, Korra is a princess, sort of, kind of, in a way.
Yeah.
Because we learn that her uncle, Unalaq, is the brother of her father, and her uncle, Unalaq, is like the chief of the Northern Water Tribe, which, if you remember way back to season 1 of Avatar The Last Airbender, that's like the guy who is Yue's dad. So she, I don't know if it means she's like descended from Yue or if like someone else took over or whatever. But if that guy hadn't got kicked out of that tribe, Korra would have been the princess and the avatar, which seems like a bit much for one arrogant girl. You know, can you imagine how terrible she would have been if she'd been the princess and the avatar instead of being raised in a hut?
Well, she'd have a different mother, wouldn't she?
True.
She may have had this. There would be a totally different avatar who maybe was more spiritual.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like she's really associated still with, like, this, quote, royal family, because she goes, oh, those are my cousins, Desna and Eska. Like, she knows them, regardless of the banishment. She, like, probably had, like, play dates, I assume, and Unalaq was probably like, hey, kids, let's go play with your cousin Korra, you know? Like, so I feel that she has enough associations that she could be, like, she can be the Mia Thermopolis to the situation if she wants to be.
Oh,
like, we could Princess Diaries her if we want to, but she doesn't ever show that interest right now. She's like, whatever, royalty. Like, I'm the Avatar. It's more important.
I mean, the Avatar's way cooler.
Yeah.
And what's the bet that once Unalaq found out that his banished brother, like, gave birth to the Avatar, that he was like, oh, yes, let's make amends, brother.
Yeah. Right.
Brother, exactly. If you know what I mean. Like, yeah. So Princess Korra. Caitlin, was that something you would have liked to see?
I don't think that would have worked out very well. I'm trying to picture Korra in, like, a UA outfit and coming up short, because it's... She does not have the temperament for that.
I don't think she could get her hair that neat.
No, she definitely couldn't. You're right. Because she always, no matter what she does, will have, like, those messy bangs, you know?
Yeah.
Well, even when she dresses up, too, she kind of, like, keeps the same hairstyle, like, no matter what.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Though there is plenty of hair bending in this show as well.
Oh,
see.
Isn't there? Oh, God. Natalie, if we thought that Zuko hair bending was bad in the last show, there's some extreme hair bending coming up that it's going to blow your mind, Adiana. You really will not know what to think. I can't wait for your reactions to, like, one specific one. When we hit it, I'm just going to be like, what do you think?
Hair bending?
Yes. Mm.
I hope Korra gets a new haircut, because I hate those 3 ponytails. Like, I've said it before, it's the worst of Sokka and Katara's hair put together. So.
Ariana, I'd like you to explain something from the doc. That you've written in the synopsis, where you said that Bolin discovers his bisexuality.
Yeah.
Yes.
Please explain. Oh, do you mean because of Desna and Esther?
Yes. I mean, right. I'm just kidding, but he is like, wow, they're hot.
Yeah. He's a guy. Which one's the guy? Yeah, no, true. That's,
no, can I just say
it doesn't even matter. We'll take him.
No, I'm not kidding, Adriana. I bought it into it. Like, that was bisexual right there for me, right then and there. I needed no other convincing.
Cool.
And, like, I was kind of always hoping that one time they would play, like, a Parent Trap on him and, like, switch up and just talk in a higher voice. And then they'd be like, ha, caught you. You are attracted to both of us.
Anyway, moving on from that, the twins are good fun and we'll have plenty more of them. So we kind of basically, you know, get this guy, you know, Unalaq, Northern Water Chief, is in Korra's ear being like, everyone here has lost the old religion and, you know, the... You know, none of you are spiritual and the spirits don't come here and you've turned Christmas into a cheap Hallmark holiday kind of thing. You know, like, that's sort of what's going on.
That's a good way of putting it. He does want to keep the Christ in Christmas here.
It's true. Like, he's all spiritual. I mean, do we think that he believes what he's saying or is he malicious? Like, does he have an end? Ariana has already decided he's a big bad and he's controlling the spirits, so... I don't know, like, Caitlin, a character like this, how much do you think that he believes what he's saying? Like, do you think he is a deeply spiritual person who believes this thing, or do you think he's flat-out manipulative and just trying to trick Korra?
I don't know that he can't be both, because he could be using his manipulation to get to his true religious ends, but... He comes across to me like he genuinely believes it and looks down on anyone who is not as great a believer as he is.
Yeah.
But and it's, I mean, definitely skeezy.
We certainly learn that he's not exactly just making it up. Like, he's not saying, you know, like, ooh, Jesus is coming to get you and there's no evidence of Jesus. We definitely get some bad spirits, like some unhappy spirits coming up and causing havoc and fighting them, but, you know, we have no record of that happening year after year, so, you know, is that because of Korra, or is that because of him, or is that, like, you know, why aren't they all just turning into nice pandas once Korra's had a conversation with them, you know, like, Aang, when he had to fight the bad spirit, like, you know, how did you guys, what's your impression of, I guess, the spirit world in Korra versus what we sort of know about it from Avatar Last Airbender, like, Ariana, sort of, what did you take away from Atla about the spirits and what we might see coming up, I guess?
I mean, the spirits are hella creepy. Like, that owl guy. But then, again, and, like, the masked person. But they also, like, always have a point. You know what I mean? Like, the owl guy, he was like, bad because we wanted to get information. But also, he was, like, right. People are starting wars all the time for, like, no reason. So... Yeah. The spirits are weird. They're conflicting.
Mm. True. Mitch, any further thoughts on that?
I find it interesting that Adriana brings up those two spirits, and specifically because I feel that they're like...
Because they're coming back?
No. Like talking about like where the fandom was when this first episode aired and we learned that this was book two spirits, like they were the most wanted. They were like, okay, cool, we really want these because this is a spirit book of Korra. And they've always been fan favorites for their own given reasons.
Well, the guy who steals the face, I feel like he didn't get enough. Like, his storyline wasn't completed. Like, the owls was.
Ariana,
what?
Read the comics.
Thank you. I was about to say that. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
You will be amazed as to where the what's his name? The guy who steals faces.
Ko.
You'll be surprised with how Ko ties into everything so cleanly. It's amazing, actually.
Okay. I know. I need to read them. Maybe so that I can find out.
Presentation. We could sit her down and read them to her and like give her a screen. So it would be like right. We could act it out, and then you'd see the picture, and then like it'd be like watching an episode, except we'd act it out for you.
Is the boulder in the comics? I don't think he is.
We could just make him be in the comments.
The boulder thinks we should.
All right. So, Korra continues her nastiness in being super harsh to Tenzin because she's drinking Unalaq's Kool-Aid really fast. Which is, it broke my heart. I don't know about anyone else, but I hate people being mean to Tenzin, and that includes Korra, and she can just go away, and this show can be about Tenzin and his vacation. The end.
Preach.
Yes.
Anyone have anything to add to that, or do we all just agree, basically? No.
Indeed.
Pretty much agree.
I don't know, like, where does that come from? Like, why, after everything you've been through, why would you turn around and act like that? Like, what, like, is it just that you're that arrogant? Like,
he's one of the only people, like, him and her dad now, they're the only people who are like, you know, I know that you think you're the Avatar, but you still, like, need to listen. Like, there's still things you need to learn. And she's like, no, I'm the Avatar. I do what I want.
Well, it feels like she doesn't give Mako any credit, because he did, like, most of the hard work in that Amon fight. She just kind of had, like, a couple air punches in the end.
I know.
But he was the one, like, electrocuting him and getting, like, blood bent and, like, thrown around the room. And, like, it was intense. And I just feel like Korra's just like, haha, I did it.
Well, he's bothering her now, so she doesn't really care.
It sucks.
Has she given back everyone who lost their bending powers, or just Lin? I mean, she lined everyone up and healed them all, or just Lin because she's a special case?
Like, can't be bothered for everyone else.
So like, I'll probably get around to that sometime, yeah. Just
well, she's in Republic City again.
Take a number.
She's in Republic City again for a bit, so I'm sure that they could, yeah, like, take a number. Like, it's at the deli line, it's just like, okay, I'll take 10 more today, you know?
Nice, very nice.
I'll order some airbending, I'll order some half a pound of waterbending.
I don't know. So all in all, this episode ends with basically her and Mako being like, sorry, I've been such a bitch. And like, oh, I've just been trying to help you. Oh, you know.
I want to make something really clear, though, because I was tempted to call her a bitch, and I feel like she's not. She hasn't earned that. Like, to be a bitch, that requires, like, tenacity and, like, active planning and productivity. Like, Azula is a bitch. Katara can be a bitch. People like that are bitches. She is just being a dick. She's, like, not... She's just, like, laying
she's
there and being like, whatever, she's lazy.
I would call her being a brat because it's childish.
Yes.
I agree with all of that, actually. So, yes, I think that that's actually all very correct. But, yeah, she's trying to apologize to Mako for being a difficult girlfriend and not, like, appreciating his support and blah, blah, blah. And he says to her, it's okay, your heart's in the right place. And Ariana's made the good point of, like, saying that that's, like, really not a good thing, because it's, like, that all it means is, I know you don't try to suck, but you do anyway. I'm not sure if that's exactly how I interpret that, or how I interpret that in that moment. I think that there's a case for that being true in general, but in that moment, I'm not sure if that's exactly what Mako was trying to say, but we can pretend it is.
Someone said that to me once. Someone said that to me once about you mean well, and they're like, actually, that's like the worst thing you could say to somebody because, it's like, I know you don't want to be awful, but you are. Well. Anyway.
I mean, true. How do we feel, I guess, about Mako and Korra at this point, like about their dynamic? I know, you know, Mitch, you said there's too much romance, but like, sort of where we've jumped right back into their relationship. You know, oh, they got together, and then episode one, we've jumped into like, oh, it's Trouble Town, and, you know, we suck at being together, basically. So, how do you feel about them at this point, like, as a couple? Do you think that it's meant to represent something good, or do you think it's meant to represent something that is not so good?
Makora is unhealthy and doesn't need to exist right now because Mako didn't get into it nicely. Essentially, it's kind of like Mako was cheating on Asami, so how could they have a good buildup of their relationship, Korra and Mako, at this point? That might have like been the start of like this weirdness. Like I don't know. Maybe Korra doesn't trust him because of how she like won him or something. It's weird because like she just decides to treat him very poorly, but he's being nice now. Like he was the dick last season, and now it's Korra's turn. She was
Korra's the clan of. Legend
oh
of Korra.
My god.
I mean, I wasn't gonna, but I
mean,
yeah.
Where is the lie, though? at least these showrunners knew that when they were writing it and didn't expect it to actually work.
Didn't have a whole entire Breaking the Fourth Wall episode saying it was horrible and continue it regardless.
Fuck. Oh my god, Glee, why did you do that?
No, wait, two episodes in a row, thank you.
Sorry, we're talking about Glee, not this. Sorry. Okay. yeah. Sorry. But oh my god.
I mean, oh. I want them to break up, but I don't want to know that they're breaking up yet.
No.
But I feel like with them, their problem is that, like, they have a lot of respect for each other, and they really, like, they value each other because they're so, they're like, you're such a badass, you're such a badass. But, like, they're too similar to work together in a relationship because they're just, like, clashing.
Maybe that's it, yeah. I think it's a combination of, like, the whole weird Asami situation of how they started and then, like, the way they act is such, like I was saying, Kor to me is so Fire Nation, and Mako is definitely Fire Nation, just for, like, his broodiness that he has, you know? This is almost like if Zuko was dating himself.
Because their whole country is, like, broody.
No,
like,
you can't. Like, I was saying, like, you can't...
That's not true. There's Ty Lee, okay?
No, you can't classify a Hogwarts house and all given people. You can't classify a nation or a type of bending into all of that. So I should just say that they... Yeah, you're right. They do have very similar personalities that... I find akin to some firebenders that we've seen in the past. And like I was saying, like, I really do feel like this is like if Zuko was trying to date himself, and he was just like, this is so frustrating. No one
you
likes
mean, like,
me.
Like when he dated May?
Oh, well, she was more depressive. Like, she was more down, you know? Like,
Caitlin's gonna take you down.
That's her ship.
I feel like
you know?
I should say something, like, in favor of Macora, even though I have nothing nice to say, because I'm sure some of our listeners are, like, really passionate and they're going to be angry at us. But I did, at Comic-Con, for the first time, I met someone who was, like, a hardcore Macora shipper. And so...
Really? I don't see them too often, regardless
which
of...
She, well, it was... Yeah. Now that the show's over, not so much. When it was going on, yes, a lot, basically. Now that the show's over...
Which she really liked, I think. Like, I don't... When I was listening to her, I don't think she liked anything so much about the relationship, which is, I feel like, necessary when you like a ship. But she liked, like, what it represented in that she's, like, she's a tomboy girl, and she liked that Mako chose Korra, and that even though Korra was, like, the tomboy and Asami was, like, the elegant, beautiful Victoria's Secret model, that, like, Korra, even as rough and tumble as she was, could still be seen as sexy, and she liked that.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's valid, but that's also, like, you know, people with shipping, when ships don't necessarily make sense in canon, people's shipping is often not so much to do with actual what's going on in the show, and just more that what they project about what themselves or what, like, their version of the characters means to them, and it's often very little to do with the actual show.
Well,
with shipping, but I don't know.
To also wrap this all back up, to what, you know, Asami's doing in this episode with Bolin, why in the hell is she still hanging out with these people? I get it that she kind of has no one, but did she have no other, like, rich, snobby friends that she could have hung out with? I don't get it.
I know, Asami's way too good for all these people.
Of her father.
That's,
like,
true.
Well, Bolin was there to, like, take down her father with him, so I get that they're kind of bonding now, and that's cool, but, like, just imagine how scorned you would be feeling, like, how awkward it would be being around, like, Pakora. Like, that's
her only friends are her ex-boyfriend, his girlfriend, and his brother.
Basically his mistress for your relationship. Yeah, that's
his,
like,
mistress.
Like,
God.
The homewrecking whore. Mitch.
Yeah. No, we thought Pema was bad.
Guys.
Pema is the worst.
No, I mean, Korra took Pema's advice.
She
didn't
know.
Can we just
she
say that?
She tried to take him away. Pema did. She was all proud.
I don't think that Korra wasn't...
And their relationships are totally separate. He dated Asami for, like, 3 weeks. Lin and Tenzin dated for, like, 50 years.
I still stand by the fact that I think that Korra was like, hey, Pema, what should I do? She's like, go steal that man. That's what I did. And it's...
You guys. We're gonna stop that.
What are we
now
projecting onto this?
I don't know.
See, like, I feel like Pema.
We're
gonna
see much. I think we can save some Pema discussion for the next episode when we get to the Acolyte thing. So let's carry on. Favorite scenes from this episode. Mine was Tenzin's vacation map with his thumbs up cartoon in the middle of it. Because I love him. I love him so much. So Caitlin.
So mine was. And we see Korra actually using the Avatar state for what it should be, and she was fighting.
Wow.
I just
Who'd
thought the
thought?
Animation in that scene is gorgeous. Like, the colors are, like, very dark purple, and the animation is really pretty.
So
really
glowy eyes, too. They remind me of Kingdom Hearts, if anyone plays that. I love that art style.
Ariana, how about you?
Mine was when, like, every scene with the gang kids, but, like, especially when they're at the dinner table and Tenzin is so grumpy and they're just, like, teasing him. And I just got this wonderful vision of, like, teenage Tenzin and Lin being, like, really broody and then them coming and, like, making fun of them.
Sitting behind them at the movies, yeah. Like, throwing popcorn at them.
Yes.
Mitch, how about you?
Mine's, like, the first scene that Bumi has with Tenzin, and, like, Bumi's just so excited to annoy his brother, and Tenzin's just like, he knew this was coming, and he's just like, I just gotta, like, get through this. This is like, are you sure you're, like, you can't, like, go out of retirement? And he's like, nope!
Oh, they're all so terrible. I love them.
But I almost can't help but feel bad for Bumi in this situation, because he's so unwanted.
No.
He's not unwanted.
We'll talk about that next episode.
Yeah. Jeez. We've got lots of gang kids stuff to talk about next episode.
Yeah.
So favorite lines. Mine was between which one is the boy?
now you know how Bolin feels, Natalie. You know how Bolin feels.
Eska's the girl.
Eska's the girl, and Desna's the boy. So Eska's the girlfriend. Yeah. Anyway, the girl twin and Bolin, basically. when she's sort of clocking Bolin, and she says, "You amuse me. I will make you mine." And he says, "You mean like a boyfriend or like a slave?" And she says, "Yes." And I remember the first time I ever saw this, dying. And do you guys, for listeners and Ariana, and do you guys know who that voice actress is?
No, who is it?
It's Aubrey Plaza. If you watch,
oh my gosh, is it? That's hilarious.
So that's like a double amazingness, because that's like just the role that she plays in everything anyway. So it's just great. So I love that. So yeah. All right, Caitlin.
So mine was during Ariana's favorite scene, and they're giving him crap, and Kaya's like, "Oh, don't tease him. He's so sensitive." He tends to just, "I'm not sensitive." Like, oh, I love him.
Do we know how much older they are than him? Like, what's the age difference?
I don't know. I don't know that it matters when you get into, like, your
40s. Like a 10-year period or something. Like,
yeah.
Well, no.
Like, I feel like they were all kind of pumped out within, like 6 years or something, and that was it.
All right, Ariana.
So mine was when Katara was being her wonderful manipulative self. Tenzin's like, "Oh, I don't want to take my brother and sister." And she's like, "This is your family, Tenzin. When you get to be my age, you'll be thankful for the time you had with your siblings." I was like, Sokka's dead.
But she says it with a smile, like she killed him.
No!
What the fuck, Mitch?
Like, I almost half expect her next line to be like, "And I put that bastard out of his misery." Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, stop, no. She says it with a smile because she knows it's going to work. She played the dead Sokka card. Everyone has to comply.
That sounds like a tarot card, the dead Sokka card.
This is the worst. This is the worst. Oh, God. All right. Mitch, moving on from that image of Katara.
Mine was just when Bumi's hearing about vacation tents, and he says, "Relax, I'd pay money to see that. Maybe I'll tag along just to see vacation tents in."
vacation tents is my fave.
It's like he puts on different hats.
Talk
and it's like
shit, Bumi.
It's like he's a little like a Ken doll,
with a sunblock on his nose.
Right, aww. Exactly. Like, I'd imagine him in his bathing suit and being like, "Ken and Barbie are going to the beach. This is vacation, Ken."
It's sweet. I bet we could find a picture of vacation Tenzin. So going to the next episode, the Southern Lights, in which Tenzin goes on vacation. Ariana, do you want to read this synopsis as well, if that's okay?
Yes. So in this chapter, the bad guy tricks Korra because she is dumb. He wants to go to the South Pole, and she does because she is dumb. Her dad wants to come along, but she tells him to leave because she is dumb. The bad guy shows up with tanks in the South Pole, like he is a less stylish Azula, and she's like, fine, because she's dumb. Meanwhile, the entire Air Nation goes on a field trip, plus Pema, and Avatar Aang's other two children get treated like toilet bowl cleaners because apparently a requirement for being an Air Acolyte is that you be dumb and also downright rude to humans who are not Tenzin. Also, Pema gets flowers and she is ungrateful, of course, and Jinora discovers that she has magic powers maybe, and this show should probably be about her instead.
Natalie just found Vacation Tenzin.
Yes!
Laid back vacation tents, and he's in a Hawaiian shirt and sunglasses. It's so cute!
We'll have to send that to Brittany so she can tweet it out.
It's so fabulous. Good. It's a Pinterest link, so I hope that we can find... I don't know who the artist is, so if anyone knows how to find the actual person who drew it, that's great. But I don't know how to do that on Pinterest, so...
Ariana, you have like a certain poetry. You have like a poetry to this one with like because she is dumb. It feels like that's like the telltale heart of like your synopsis here.
Yeah, true. There's lots of vacation Tenzin.
There is.
Oh, I just found one of him in a little straw hat. It's great.
I found one of him in a Speedo.
Oh no!
This needs to be the legend of vacation Tenzin.
Oh, I wish. Okay, so moving on from Vacation Tenzin, I suppose, if we must. Cora is dumb. That's true. First of all, were we not already at the South Pole? The Southern Water Tribe's not at the South Pole? Because when it was Katara and Sokka, they were always like, we've got to go back to the South Pole. Like, or do they just mean the exact, like, center pole of that continent or whatever, maybe? I don't know. Anyway.
Are they talking magnetic or are they talking geographic?
Who can tell?
That's it.
So Desna and Eska, the twins, they're tagging along and they've decided that they own Bolin now, or at least Eska does.
No, they both do. They absolutely both do.
They both own him. All right, that's fine. How do you guys feel about the twins? Ariana, what are you feeling about them at this point?
I'm obsessed with them, and I want them, like, they're the only thing I like right now about Korra's storyline. They're the only thing that's keeping me going there, so I really, like, enjoy them. I think I have, my favorite scene involves them, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Caitlin, how about you? Are you a fan of the twins or not a fan of the twins?
I like them right now, I guess. I don't like
them. Oh no, that means they're evil.
Or it just means there's a lot of them going on.
They get old.
And they get really old to me. So I think they're fine right now. But I don't have great feelings about them.
Oh, do you guys want to see something that'll make you really sad about that we're not getting the gang kids? Look at this cartoon someone drew of, like, young Bumi and Tenzin, like, teenage age, and Bumi making fun of Tenzin's new airbender tattoo.
Oh, weird whoops about this new tattoo. Shut up,
Bumi. Oh my gosh, they're so cute.
Sorry, I'm just like derailing this because
he really looks like Sokka in that one.
Yeah,
I think he looks like Hercules. Okay. So we have vacation Tenzin.
I agree. Let's
wait. Can I say the twins? I have an opinion on the twins. There was a still released by, like, EW that was... It was, like, such a big deal when season 2 was happening of Korra. Like, such a big freaking deal. So, like, EW was covering it. It was such an exciting thing to have, like, new stills from them. And they had one of the twins when they're looking over at Bolin and they hiss at him. And they have, like, that... Like the girl has, like, that really intense eye makeup on. And it just, like, the way they look is so, like, fierce. Like, they could be on RuPaul's Drag Race and I would be so excited. They get me so happy just, like, how awesome they look.
Okay, I don't know if I thought about RuPaul's Drag Race, but fair enough. I agree with Caitlin. I like them, but they are a lot, and they are around for a while.
Is she, like, actually his girlfriend right now?
Yeah. Well, she's decided that she is, so, yeah, I think so.
Well, he's her boyfriend slave, because she just, yes, that's it. Like, which one am I? Yes.
Yeah.
I don't understand why Bolin has so much trouble with girls. Like, he's really sexy.
He's hot, and he's, like, I don't know, maybe he's just awkward, he's or maybe fun. He goes for the wrong people.
Like, both brothers are hot. What's the issue here?
But, like, Bolin isn't just hot. He's, like, nice, too. So he probably chats to girls and, like, doesn't make them feel uncomfortable.
I have no idea. I have no idea why he's so bad at it.
And I don't get why, like, Mako gets the girls. Like, how does he always get the girl when he's, like, douchey mech douche face over here, treating everyone like dirt until he finds out he needs something from them.
Because girls like that, haven't you heard?
Bolin deserves nice things, and Mako does not. And that's my final say.
Well, Bolin's gonna, you know, have some choices this season.
Ooh! I kind of hope one of them is a Sami. Like, I don't know if they, like, I feel like she's too good for him. Like, she's definitely way too good for him. But I would like to see, like, a few dates at least. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, I can't say anything. Okay.
All right. So we have gotten to another discussion point of how much Cora sucks in season two. So...
I'm sorry. That's just, like, all I could think of this whole time. Like, what is wrong with you, Cora?
Well, what specifically was sticking out to you in this episode about how much she sucked? Which is really, this is really bad and hatey, and we shouldn't be this hatey, but what's sticking out to you about how much
she's just a child-ish. I mean, she's like a woman now, but that she, like, sends her dad away, and she's, like, still being mean to her friends, and she's just, like, not using her brain, really. I don't see why she trusts this man who's, like, showing up at exactly the right time, doing everything. Like, it's very Tarlok, and I don't see why she trusts him, except that I guess he's her uncle, but...
Do you feel like they have, like, a uncle-niece relationship going on here?
No. I mean, they know each other, but not, like, I don't know how well.
Like, there's no, like, oh, we're blood, so let's get along. It just feels like, kind of just, like...
Why hasn't he mentioned this any other year that he's visited for the festival?
Yeah, exactly.
Like... Like, is it only because she's, like, the Avatar fully formed now and that he can use her to his own ends? Like, I don't know.
He's waiting for her to fully cook as an Avatar before he can use her for his recipes.
Yeah. Caitlin, how about you? Like, what, she's really, I don't know, Cora, her behavior and her, like, do you think that she's drinking the Kool-Aid? Like, what? Why do you think she's doing this?
It's like she's one of those, like, a bird that's like, ooh, shiny. I'm going to go off to the shiny, because it was, last season it was airbending. That was new and shiny, and now she's gotten bored with it. So it's like, oh, talking to the spirits, that's new and shiny, and not Tenzin and what we've been doing. I'm bored. I'm going to go do something else. And it's convenient to do something new and different. So,
yeah, do you think... Oh, God. Like, do you think that her trust of this guy or her determination to go with this guy, with Unalaq, is actually born from her interest or her trust in him, or is it born from her, like, annoyance at Tenzin at being told what to do? Like, do you think it's just rebellion? Like, or do you think it's that she actually has
rebellion. Because otherwise she'd have no reason to be mean to Tenzin. Because she's not just like, you know, Tenzin, I think that I should try this instead. She's like, ugh, Tenzin, go away.
We're done here.
Yeah. Like, you know.
Well, this is after she's found out that she wasn't...
Her dad.
She didn't necessarily need to be cooped up. Like, that wasn't Aang's order. That was what...
Oh, that's true. Okay,
Tenzin
that was, like,
and her father wanted.
Because this whole time I've been like, Aang, you were so dumb. Like, why would you leave her there? Because in my brain, like, the best place for her to grow up would be... Well, like, to spend a little bit of time everywhere, you know, so that she gets to know all the different cultures, or at the very least to live in Republic City where there is a bunch of cultures in one place instead of being isolated. But now that I'm like, well, her dad wanted her to be isolated. Like, why? Why did they want her isolated?
Katara was okay with it. Like, you know, she was there. She was okay with it.
I know. Everybody was. They're all so dumb.
Well, it's kind of silly because it feels like the way that the Avatars are treated are like... pre-media presidents in the United States where you had to travel everywhere so everyone could see what you looked like and who you are. I wonder if Cora was to just walk into a random town like Aang used to, if she would be noticed, if she would be recognized, or would just be like, okay, that's just another person. Because she hasn't, like, taken her rounds. She hasn't, like, I feel like they need almost to
just,
like...
She hasn't gone on a tour being like, come see the Avatar speak at your local town hall.
You know? Right! I mean, that's Hunger Games too, kind of, in a way. Like, I think it would have worked if they had, like, this official tour going to, like, every nation, like, every little area, and just, like, showing off Korra, she'll give a little speech, like, you know, prep her some more, rather than just say...
Oh my gosh, that should have been, like, season one. That would have been so fun.
Yeah, like, learning, like, that's a good excuse to travel, just to, like, and now that, it feels like everyone, like, the world, and, like, Tenzin, and everyone, like, everyone's kind of like, okay, we know what to do with this Avatar thing, we're gonna get it right this time, no, we're not gonna mess up. And then they did mess it up, because no one knows her, it seems silly.
I don't know either. I mean, maybe it's because she's, like, quite young, and they wanted her to, like, have an, quote-unquote, normal childhood, but she didn't, because she lived in an ice cave with, like, no friends, and she was this arrogant little brat, so
yeah, like,
I don't know.
Like, who would she hang out with up there? It seems like...
Only people... Oh, you're going to be the Avatar, Cora. You're going to be the best. Look at how good you are.
Right.
Yeah.
She was just pet all the time and spoiled, I'm sure, and given everything she ever needed, and she's still struggling to, like, get over that, because... Like, how does she even know how to date someone, for instance? That just...
But she obviously doesn't. That's why she made such a mess of it last season.
I feel like Naga was, like, her only companion, and that's just, like, it's sad. I wish that, like, I'm almost with Korra here that her father shouldn't have kept her so locked up, because I feel like that was really stupid.
I agree, it's stupid.
But I don't agree with the way she approached it. Like, she gets too hard on her father too quick when she doesn't try and see it coming from, like, a loving standpoint. Because he's very earnest about it, and he's like, yes. And Unalaq's like, yes, muhaha, go to my side.
I have many plans for you, muhaha.
Yeah, it's, like, so mustachey villain already. And it's like, come on, Korra, how stupid could you be?
That's the thing about Unalaq. Like, do you think that it's her naivety of being trapped up, like, that she's, like, trusting Unalaq too easily because she has no, like, coping mechanisms for, like, you know, manipulation or not trusting people? But she's literally just been through this massive event 6 months ago with, like, people being terrible. So I don't understand. Like,
I mean, I think it's important that she knows him, and she probably grew up seeing him, like, once a year or something. So, like, she has no reason to not trust her family.
I suppose so.
At this point.
I suppose so, yeah. So, I mean, she does her whole thing. He sends her off into the forest alone, and everyone's like, Korra can't go alone, but she goes alone, and then she almost gets wiped out, but then she manages to make the spirits behave themselves somehow. I don't really know how she did it, but she does something that makes Unalaq very pleased with the progress of his spirit porthole. And then we see that he also has a ton of battleships coming into the South Pole, and he's like, oh, yeah, you opening that was just the first step. We've actually got all of these other things that we have to do, basically, to make stuff right. So how did that, you know, how did you guys feel when you saw the battleships coming, I guess? Were you like, uh-oh, this guy's super evil, or what? I mean, I think we can kind of assume that it's not legit at the moment, but... Well,
Ariana, have you seen the episode titles for the next two that are coming up?
If
you
I saw that it's like bad stuff is going to happen. It's like it's called, like, I was going to say the Rift. No, that's like the comic.
The next one. Can I say the next episode title or is it just what? It's Civil War.
Civil War. South versus North.
Yeah.
So I guess I kind of answered that.
Yeah, it's like real Civil War.
So this guy wants some. This guy wants. Some power and some stuff. And
he wants to be, because does the South, like, have a leader? Because I don't remember them.
Katara, that's it. I don't know.
Because they have a leader.
Like, I don't know. Everybody, like, died in the South Pole, right?
Right.
So
how are they even waterbenders in the South? Like, where did they breed out of? I don't get it.
No, Katara. Because...
Oh, no! You did it! You did not, Natalie.
I don't know.
Oh, my God, that's great.
Because Katara, her parents weren't waterbenders, right?
I'm sure more people can just be born, like...
Yeah. You don't have to have, your parents don't have to be benders.
So you can have, so you can have two muggle parents with a wizard kid here. Is that
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So Caitlin, was that you that wrote Everything Changed When the
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what's going on for Korra, and apparently she still hasn't twigged that this might be a problem. Like, you know, we'll see, but...
Huh. Huh. I wonder what those battleships are doing here.
That doesn't seem sketchy at all.
Interesting. But yeah, so now they're all in the South Pole dealing with that, whereas our true faves, the Airbender family and Aang's children, are on their vacation around the world to the Air Temples, without Korra, but with the Airbender children and Bumi and Kaya. So they get to the Southern Air Temple, and as we've discussed many times on this show, the air acolytes are like creepy fangirls and treat Tenzin like he's like the savior of life and treat his wife like she's like the Virgin Mary because she carried all of the
benders. She's not even an airbender, and they're like, oh my god, yeah, Virgin Mary, that's like the perfect comparison.
It's like, well, congratulations, it's true. It's literally what it is.
Like, you know, she's the mother of the new generation of airbenders, so she's like worshipped. And then they're just like, we thought you were the servants to Kaya and Bumi, so how did that make you guys feel?
This makes me so furious, because Pema is, like, not even a real airbender. She's just some lady. Like, she could be replaced with anybody. But, like, Bumi and Kaya, they're half airbenders. They're actually more Air Nation than Tenzin's kids. Just because they're not airbenders doesn't mean they're not Air Nation. Like, you know, not everybody in the Water Tribe is a water bender.
Yes,
so
yeah, I agree.
That's what's so infuriating, because they're the last Air Nation people. They have the most Air Nation
of
blood.
Aang's children, yeah.
Yeah, and they're just like, oh, whatever.
Like, what do you think?
I didn't even know Aang had more kids.
Aang had other children? Like, Jesus.
Well, you would think that they would be creepy fangirls to them, too, because
they would know all of Aang's backstory, that they would know all of their life.
Like,
and stuff.
Especially, why aren't they jumping all over Boomy? Because Boomy could make airbender babies. Like, eventually, at least.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, all of those women should be like, Boomy, Boomy, impregnate me. Let's try for some airbenders.
Reader
like,
Boomy.
Oh,
it's
kind of
sad
because
Kaya doesn't have a chance because, like, there aren't any airbending men that aren't related to her. So,
well, I mean, she is a waterbender, but she could also have, like, not waterbender children, sort of like the, what's his name, the two brothers, Mako and Bolin. They're two different kinds.
Yeah, and I'm sure that actually maybe if one of these air acolytes just used their, like, wishful willpower, perhaps they could still, but perhaps they could still get an airbender out of Kaya if they wanted to, like, genetically.
Jesus. Christ.
What are those windows called? Like, you draw a square and you try and figure out, like, what recessive and aggressive or whatever genes will come
through.
There's
got to be some recessive genes in there somewhere.
And I feel like I feel like we have the impression that airbending has to be pretty dominant if it's come through in three kids so far.
Yeah, if you've got, I suppose. I mean, we talked a lot about last season about how, like, creepy the whole air acolyte thing is. Again, there's a bit of that in the comics if you're interested. In how that started, but we've talked about how creepy it is. There's this whole air school all fangirled Aang and Tenzin, and that, like, Pema lucked out as the lucky one that got to be, like, the uterus.
She's like
for
the
Barry.
Queen, yeah. She's like the queen of the airbenders.
She's like and the queen. She is. I wonder if he, like, just looked in a crowd and was just like, that one, and that was it.
And it was kind of like a joke, but now it's kind of like not a joke as well, because, like, they really do act like that, and it's weird. So,
like, how could you? Like, this feels like the equivalent of, like, a celebrity dating a fan and truly and dearly falling in love with them. That happens, but it's still kind of creepy to me.
Yeah, it is a similar situation, I believe. Like, or what we have talked about before.
It's like, deeper than that. It's like if the Pope married, like, somebody who...
Some nun.
Like, yeah.
If the Pope married somebody. It's... Most accurately, it's like someone was, like, a professor at college, and, like, they had all of these, like, really worshipful students, and then when one of the students ended up being his, like, bit on the side, if you know what I mean, and that was Pema. But I don't know. Caitlin, how do you feel about the air acolyte attitude?
I feel so bad for Kaya and Boomy. I just, it kills me. Kills me.
And it kind of makes you wonder how Aang treated them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he just, like, went around the world with Tenzin being like, my airbender's son. Because we know Aang
probably did.
Aang isn't a super rational person. Like, he was very thoughtless. I mean, we last saw him when he was 12, and now he's dead.
Come on, don't do that to me.
But, you know, his personality, he may have really spent a lot of time, you know, worshipping his airbender son and not realizing it, but kind of neglecting the others. So that also sucks.
I can 100% see Aang doing that, and I feel like they probably owe a lot to Katara that they don't, like, hate Tenzin, you know what I mean? That they aren't super resentful of him, and they obviously seem to love him and, like, joke around with him. I mean, that must have been, like, a lot of work being like, no, you're valuable too.
Well, and Tenzin's the youngest too, so they probably had more of Aang's attention before Tenzin was born.
And then,
like,
then
oh, we have an airbender!
And then he came baby. Along and Aang was like, finally! Like, later noobs to the other kids. Like, this,
like, especially Boomy. Like, what stock would he have in Boomy? Because he was just like, I can't teach you bending, so whatever.
Yeah.
That's sad. Well, it's almost like he, like, wanted to make up for, like, the fact that he knew he wasn't going to like Boomy by giving him the name of his best friend.
Nice.
To be like, you're still loved, it's okay.
Guys, this is depressing. Okay.
So Mitch has Katara being a murderer and Aang being a horrible father.
I don't think he meant to be horrible. I think, Natalie's right, that he was probably just, like, accidentally neglectful. You know how, like the baby in the family is usually, like, coddled, and then sometimes the older ones are forgotten. So I feel like that was probably a similar situation, but amplified, because the baby was actually special.
Well, it makes me wonder, too, like, why didn't Aang even try and teach, like, especially Boomy, like the Heir Acolyte life. Like, this is what it's all about. Like, why didn't Bumi want to become one of these fangirls? Or, like, at least hang out with them?
Probably, because it would suck to be around this all the time. Oh, your Aang's not Bender Child? Oh.
So you feel like Bumi had to, like, make up for it all by becoming that commander, or whatever he was.
I mean, he's a badass, okay? Leave Bumi alone, okay? Just like Sokka was useful without his bending, so is Bumi.
If Bumi was, like, the commander of the army, and he, like, or the ex, you know, ex-commander, and he was working with, you know, General Iroh, who's Zuko's grandson that we saw in the, you know, the finale, maybe he, like, went and, maybe Zuko fostered him. Maybe he was like, my dad sucks, I'm gonna go live in the Fire Nation with Uncle Zuko. Quote-unquote Uncle Zuko. And, you know, got into the military, you know, military lifestyle. Yeah, oh, God. All right, you know,
she's way too
that.
Sexy Fire Nation for this world. She doesn't belong in this whole situation. Like, yeah. I don't understand how she would take that shit. Like, the Heir Acolyte's just like saying, okay, you're like the slaves, right? Or whatever, like the servants.
The slaves. The servants.
Well, that's Bolin. It's such crap, because they're not seeing these two people for like the human beings that they are, and it just really pisses me off even more about Pema, because she hung out with these kind of people, and she probably would have like said the same thing. Like, I don't know, like the company you keep. So
People are getting really mad at all of our Pema hate, and I'm sorry.
We are being horrible. I'm not going to lie. We're being like really awful.
People are like, you can like Lin and Pema, and I'm like, I understand that rationally, but like emotionally, no, I can't.
I do like Lin and Pema, but we just got to a point, and the joke was too funny, and now it's real. Sorry, guys. Like,
well, that's what Zutara became, and that's why it's just, we can't help it.
Zutara is not a joke, okay?
See?
Holy shit.
Well,
I mean, Natalie, so is twincest. My God.
Okay, enough. All right, enough twincest.
I don't know
enough.
What just happened. There's no twincest here.
No, we were talking about a joke in Glee chat where I was joking that I wanted them to, like, get together, the twins, and then I really wanted it.
Oh, gross.
And that happened with Zutara, and that happened with Lin and Tenzin. I can't stop this. This is, like,
to do with incest.
I'll just say, sorry. The first time I watched this show, I had none of these thoughts about Pema.
No.
And all of that stuff. Nothing like
Definitely
that.
Not.
I was like, you know, yes, Lin and Tenzin clearly had a history and whatever, and then he was with her. I never thought about all of this, like, weird, like, fangirl, like, student, like, oh, you know, she was a fangirl and she lucked out with breeding the airbenders. This is all just a product of this podcast's insanity. So I'm really sorry about that, everyone, but it's there now, and I don't know what to do about it. So,
yeah. Fraser, I don't hold these views. I'm just gonna say
Well,
that.
I do. Pema physically, like, makes me angry. Even when she, like, they gave her the flowers, and she's like, oh, thanks. I'm like, wow, what an ungrateful bitch, okay? Like, just give the flowers.
But what an obvious metaphor to be like, you're so fertile.
Oh my God.
She is very fertile.
We'll drown you in flowers. Like, oh.
Okay. But I guess let's move from this point.
Let's talk about someone who's much more important than any of these noobs, and it's Jenora. Okay?
Jenora!
Because this show should be about Jenora, as we've already mentioned, and as I've said, I think, from episode one, that she's my favorite character, and
yeah.
Tenzin as well, but Jenora. And, yeah, so Jenora starts to have some things happen in this episode when she's visiting the temples. She starts to become... She starts to see some spirit stuff going on as well. So, this whole book is spirits. You know, Korra's getting in touch with her spirits as, you know, her spiritual stuff. But, yeah, what's going on with Jenora? So, you know, is she seeing real spirits or is she, like, having... It's just, you know, because all of the air nomads are, like, monks. We had, like, Monk Gyatso. He wasn't even an airbender, but he had the whole spirit world, you know, whatever he was doing with his chakras. So, yeah, any theories about what kind of spiritual connection Jenora might be having at the moment?
I mean, she is the Avatar's granddaughter, and
yes.
You know that the Air Nation was always really spiritual. So I think she can talk to the spirits. I think that's awesome, you know? Maybe she can go into the spirit world, have, like, a little road trip. That'd be fun.
I wish she was the Avatar.
I know! Guys, I know. That's what I was thinking of this whole time.
But how boring would it be if you just kept on getting, like, an airbender avatar? Because it's obviously the best type of avatar. There's no other that would ever be as good. And I think Korra's proving that right now. And, I mean, because, like, Aang didn't really, like, mess up
Kiyoshi
as much.
Kiyoshi was great.
Like, if you think about, like, all the... yeah, like, Kiyoshi did a good job, I agree, but you need to read the comics. And there's just something about having someone that's already spiritually connected innately within their culture that really works with being the Avatar. And I don't feel like any of the other nations ever really... strongly possess that ideal that it's, like, so cool to, like, talk to spirits. They're just like, that's the other thing that goes
Aang
on.
Aang was, yes, like, the right avatar at the right time.
Yeah.
They definitely needed someone who could do that quickly, get in touch with their spiritual side before
Korra
the comic comes.
Does Korra even compare to Aang? She's so much older than him, and she's still, like...
She's still a mess.
She's, like, struggling. Like, he mastered four elements before him. He saved the world. Already,
I mean,
before she,
Korra has a lot of potential. I feel bad now because obviously it's like her parents and Tenzin's fault that she isn't a more well-rounded person. They knew who she was since she was a baby. They had a lot of time to develop her into
going to tell Aang until he was older, remember? And he ran away. Like, he'd only just found out he was the Avatar. Like,
yeah.
And Aang had no way of knowing her personality.
Like, they were going to... You know, he was only about to start going on his, like, vision quest or whatever, you know, at that age. So, I don't know.
And he found out early.
Yeah, he found out too young.
And I think we have to assume that it's pretty instantaneous. Like, well, one door closes, another opens, Aang died, Korra was born, bam. As it is. We've discussed about how, like, that was how they would pick the Avatar, the past ones, we're assuming. But we don't really know that much. But from the fact that he had to be dead, he couldn't have known whether or not Korra would have been... the way she is. Like, maybe he would have agreed with Tenzin and with Korra's dad that, like, okay, Korra's too much of, like, a fireball. She can't be out in public right now. Like, she's gonna ruin so much. So,
They should have focused more on the spirituality instead of... It seems like they focused a lot on, you know, let's really develop all
let's
of your
teach
skills.
Let's teach her firebending. Let's teach her to fight and be angry and aggressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and she's been there for at least 12 years and they didn't...
She kind of knew Tenzin. She was like, I'm going to go learn airbending with Tenzin. But, like, surely he should have been around for the whole time, like, doing her, like, monk shit as well. Like, even if it wasn't airbending.
Because I'm sure he would come up to, like, visit Katara. And, you know, like, the Avatar's there, too. So might as well swing on by and teach her some, like, spiritual stuff in the meantime, right?
Look, guys, when we're responsible for the next Avatar, we'll do it better, okay?
Can you really picture, like, 13-year-old Korra, like, meditating and being serious about that, though?
That's why you need to start her when she's
Aang did.
And Aang has the complete 180 personality of Korra.
But, I mean, they know since she was, like, 3 years old.
If you do it since before she can remember, you can, like, form her personality.
But when they first found her, she was already, like, you gotta deal with it.
Yes, but if you make her... But it's like going to school. Like, some people don't like going to school, but they do it anyway. You know what I mean? Like, if you teach her, sit her in a room. You can't have dinner until you meditate. Like,
I don't see that going well with her, because they say, you know, the hardest element for people to learn is the one completely the opposite of their personality, and that's air for Korra, and the spirituality ties into that. So I think she just would have fallen on her face trying it any younger.
It's like irresponsible and dangerous to have her becoming so powerful in all of the other elements without teaching her the importance of the spirituality. Because then you just have, like, this person who's really powerful and doesn't understand how or why to
it's
use
it. It's like giving someone a gun but not a conscience or something like that. Like,
exactly.
You know, like, I don't know. Anyway, maybe that's a bit extreme. But anyway... I think we can all agree that we would have taught the Avatar differently, but...
Well, I mean, now Caitlin brings up a good point. Like, I don't think Korra would have wanted to learn it, and it almost starts to feel like a dance mom situation. Like, you can try and force it on your kid as much as you want, but if they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it.
No, but why teach her all the other stuff? Why not be like, Korra, you're the Avatar, you have to be responsible for all these things, so if you want to do the cool firebending, you also have to do this history study about being a monk, and, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like,
I just think she's too much of a brat to ever do it.
Earlier, like, and well, I don't know, like...
Yeah, lots of kids are brats, but that doesn't mean you let them act like brats. It's like... Parents
maybe,
are so annoying when they're like that.
I mean, maybe her parents were just too much of a pushover and that she was able to, like, own them, because she'll be like, I'll firebend you. You won't be able to fight it.
Oh my god.
Whatever, I'm tired of talking to Korra.
She's like, nice. Okay, so Caitlin, does anyone have anything else to say about Jinora, the avatar that we wish was, or anything like that? Like the Tenzin and Jinora situation with anything that we've seen so far before we move on?
Ariana, I oppose... Oh, you sounded very upset. You must be really angry about Korra right now.
No, I'm just...
Hot in the car.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're almost done.
You have an opportunity to notice something akin to when you first noticed Azula, or when Brittany did, in this episode. And if you didn't see it, you'll know you'll know looking back.
I know what it is! I know what it is!
That there's, like, a special person hiding in the background?
Kind of.
Or, I mean, she did go through all, like, those, she was looking at all those statues, and she was, like, really staring at one.
Okay.
And I don't know who that is, but...
Did you notice anything special about the way that statue looked?
No. Because at first I was like, is she looking at Aang? But then later she heard the voices, and I was like, no.
Okay. Well, okay, we'll come back to that later. All right.
Favorite scenes. Mine was when they exploded Bolin's magic coat, because up until the moment that she I'd forgotten that he said that was a thing that could happen, and they brought it back, and it was hilarious, and I died. But anyway. Sorry. It was ridiculous. Caitlin, yours is not ridiculous.
No. Mine was the whole story of Tanrok being banished from the Northern Water Tribe, and I was like, hello, intense and unexpected revelation.
Yeah. And so Ariana's theory about that is that Unalaq orchestrated all of that at the time. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's totally my theory.
That is intense. Okay.
So my favorite scene was, like, Bolin's face when he's gonna crash. He's just like, wah! And the two emo siblings are just like, I'll save you. And then they, like, float up, and they like, lift him up. And it was so creepy. They're, like, two vampires. But it was funny.
Yeah, I think they are vampires. I don't know. That's right. Mitch, how about you?
So mine's the fact that Korra decided she wanted to use airbedding to open up the portal. And I thought that had a significance because, as we're talking, air seems to be the element closest to the spiritual side. So that was a smart part on Korra. I would have used fire. I would have tried to melt it or water to, like, open up the ice. But it was kind of weird, spirity, Aang iceberg ice, you know? So I don't know if that would have worked.
Sure. And favorite quotes. Mine was when Korra came back and Bolin went and hugged her, and then he got pushed away by a sheet of ice, and Eska says, why are you initiating physical contact with another woman? I don't know, I just find it hilarious. It's Aubrey Plaza, I can't get it out of my head, it's April from Parks and Rec, it's the most unhealthy, creepy, weird, controlling relationship, I find it hysterical, and I don't know. It will get old real fast, but right now I find it hysterical. Okay, going down the line, Caitlin?
Mine was also Eska, when, right before they tell the story of Tanrok getting banished, and Mako's like, my brother doesn't like ghost stories, and Eska goes, don't worry, I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
Yes.
Oh. That's a dynamic that I appreciate.
So mine was when Bumi and Kaya landed at the vacation spot, and they're, like, taking out the luggage, and the lady's like, sorry, I thought you were the servants, and they're just like, we're Tenzin's brother and sister, and she goes, Avatar Aang had other children? The world is filled with more airbenders? And then they're like, we're not airbenders, and she goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I was like, excuse me, lady, you're so sorry, like, Avatar Aang is their, like, dad. You wish that you even, like, met him, okay? So calm down.
Their faces were amazing.
Yeah. Poor guys. It's so terrible. And Mitch.
Yeah, mine's this really interesting threesome thing going on with Desna, Eska, and Bolin, because Eska shows up just to come join the party with his sister and is like, does this sidecar have the capacity for two passengers?
Eska's the girl!
Still, point holds. I get Bolin's confusion. And then Bolin goes, sure does, but who's going to drive? And it's him. And, like, he's the bitch to them.
He is the bitch.
He is. So they both own him. Like, that's how it goes.
Oh, God. All right. So that was that for those, the premiere of season two. If you want to get in touch with us about any of those, you know, what we've talked about or what's coming up, you can reach us on email, which is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can join this post on Hyperbole and leave a comment, or you can go on to Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also leave an iTunes review, which helps keep us very happy and alive and active. And if you give us if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will wear gender ambiguous makeup that takes her back to her emo roots, and also she can probably fly. So that would be really great if you could do that. Thanks. Listener feedback this week. We've got quite a bit from Twitter, and then something from Hyperbole talking about our voices. So we'll go down the tweets in the same order that we just did our quotes. So I'll do the first one, and then we'll go on and say bye. So the first one was from Amanda. Heyo, Amanda says, Uncle Boomy is everything I hoped for and more. Which, yes, I'm glad that you guys like him and Brittany you agree. Yeah, cool. All right, Ariana, is that you? Do you want to do the next one there?
Sure, I'll do the next one.
Caitlin
can do it. Caitlin is probably more.
Was this your commentary that you wrote onto it?
Yeah, that's mine.
Okay, well, you guys figure that out.
I'll just do this one. Okay. So this is from Tabitha Harrison at It's Like You Know, and she says, I love Rewatchable, but I disagree with the Pema hate. I like her and Lynn both.
I do too.
And I wrote, that's funny because I love Tabitha, but disagree with her opinion of Pema. Pema sucks.
Oh my god. I'm going to say, I find the Pema jokes hilarious, but I am definitely more in the Caitlin camp. I had never had these thoughts until these jokes came up, and now I just think the jokes are funny.
Oh, I'm there too. I think every superfan is, Natalie.
There are a few questionable things, but
maybe Pema gets better, but I don't know if she can ever redeem herself in my eyes.
Do you think she needs to get pregnant again to make herself, like, worth it? Or is this, for good enough for the breeder?
Well, every time it seems like she... No, Caitlin, do the next one before this goes downhill.
So, also from Tabitha, says, The story of the gang's kids are the marauders of Legend of Korra. Everyone wants more Harry Potter. I'm like, that's accurate.
Yes, everybody wants more. They're going to make Korra comics, right? Isn't that the big reveal from SDCC?
Yes,
but they're not making gang kid comics. They're making post Korra comics, which I don't care about.
But the adults should be in it, assuming they survive the end of the series.
Well, as long as Lin and Tenzin fall in love, that's all I care about.
4 kids later, Tenzin decides to finally leave her. I've done my breeding. Goodbye.
I'm just kidding. I hope Tenzin doesn't do that because he's too classy.
He is too classy. So this is Zach at Zach80Official, and they wrote, the sound effects of bloodbending in the animation is disgusting. It's so effective. I never thought bloodbending was okay. Adiana, you have another feedback for this?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, I know that I'm, like, the only person who thinks this, but just, like, bloodbending still really gives me, like, complicated feelings, and I stand by what I said before in that it makes me uncomfortable outlawing something that people can, like, inherently... do. I feel like
people can inherently murder someone. Like people can inherently choke someone to death. Like
That's an action. Like I think it's fine to outlaw behavior, but I feel like you can use bloodbending for other things if it was studied. I think it's better to teach people to control it. Like otherwise you have these people who are like crazy and like, but I can do it so I'm supreme. But if you like teach people to use their spirituality, they would maybe use bloodbending to like cure cancer versus, you know, manipulating the underworld. So
I don't know how you would do that, but yeah, I'm sure that there's a point in there somewhere, but I don't know at this. We've seen so few people with bloodbending. We haven't met any nice people who just happen to be able to bloodbend as well, if you know what I mean.
Katara.
Like, oh fuck Katara.
Katara was the one who outlawed it, so
yeah.
That coward Katara.
Okay. So we have one long comment.
She went soft in her old age.
I'm not quite sure if this is an insult or not. But it's from Caroline J.
It's probably not. It's from her. I think we're good.
It's not insulting. It's just confusing. Just for the record, and I'm sure I'm not the only one in the world, much less the only one listening to this podcast, that has that has trouble distinguishing the voices of the hosts. It literally took me the first Atlas series to figure out that Natalie and Donya were in fact different people. Okay, I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
I'm from Australia. Donya is from Wales. She also talks at about 4 times slower the speed that I do. I find this unbelievable that people couldn't tell our voices apart. Is this just and every time I go anywhere in America, they're like, oh, you're from England, right? I'm like, no, I'm from Australia.
Natalie, like, can I just say that I read back the comments in the first ever Glee chat and people thought you were Scottish?
I don't even know what to say to that. So, okay, I'm Australian. I'm from Australia. I might not have a voice like I'm on Summer Heights High, but that's because that's like the redneck version of Australia. Like, that's like that kind of strong accent is like the equivalent of the American redneck, like the really strong kind of, I don't know a better word for it, like that kind of jokey, strong country accent, I guess. I'm Australian. Donya is from Wales, which has its own very distinct accent. And then they go on to say, I'm pretty sure I could pick out Karen and Ariana, but I'm really just as likely to confuse them with Caitlin and Brittany.
Oh.
The Boulder impression ought to be a dead giveaway, but in the time it's taken me to stop the podcast and navigate to this page and write this paragraph, I've already forgotten if it was Caitlin or Brittany. Caitlin is the Boulder, guys. Caitlin is the Boulder.
Do Brittany and I sound anything alike?
No.
I think it's funny, like, I feel like your voice and my voice, Caitlin, are, like, on two opposite registers. Like, how could you ever confuse that?
Like, I might confuse Karen with someone else, maybe, if anything. But she's the only one I can get
there. Karen has such a distinctive voice.
Well, I think it's because we know her so well, but you have to, like, put your mind in the mindset of, like, if you didn't.
Mitch is easy because everything that comes out of his mouth is a spoiler. Oh. Just kidding, Mitch. It's obviously because of your husky and masculine man voice. Listening to the Cora podcast has been so fun. I look forward to the final three books like, whoa. Well, I hope that you're happy, even if you can't tell us apart. How can we combat this? Like, genuinely. Like, we try to introduce everyone there at the beginning of the episode, but do you think we should drop our own names into the conversation
I think
more?
We should say, like, instead of you being like, hi, I'm with Caitlin, Ariana and Mitch, maybe be like, hi, I'm with Caitlin, and then Caitlin can be like, I'm Caitlin.
And like, say a fun fact about yourself every day so they can just
do your personality. Okay, we're going to do a fun fact every week so that you guys know who we are, basically, because that's just embarrassing.
Like, I'm Mitch, and I spoil everything. Like, whatever. I'm already there.
Okay, would everyone like to wrap up this podcast by doing a fun fact? Next week we'll do it from the top, but would everyone like to say their name and give a fun fact before they sign off? Sign off here?
I got a good one, yeah.
Okay, so, all right, I'll go first. We've got our sign-offs here, and I'll be like, so, bye all, I'm Natalie, and I live in Australia, which is not Scotland. It's winter here right now, and it's raining outside. So that's me. You can get used to my voice.
I'm Caitlin, and my fun fact is that I'm a Southerner, but I don't have a Southern accent.
True.
That's unique. True.
You have, like, a little bit of a Southern drawl. Occasionally it pops out.
People have told, I've heard that before, that I linger on my vowels, and I'm like, I've never heard it. It's weird.
I just thought it was a Caitlin way of speaking.
I wouldn't have ever assumed you were from, like, a quote-unquote Southern state, like, somewhere that was famous for having an accent.
I'm from the Midwest.
Yeah.
My name is Ariana, and there's only one N in my name. Thank you very much. Caroline.
See, I would have gone with, like, that you're an Aztecian princess, because you are.
I've already said that fun fact. Oh, also, McCall always spells my name with two N's, and I'm like, McCall, you've only known me for 2 years. Get it right, McCall.
It's okay. I still think when Caitlin's writing McCall, she's writing Mitch sometimes.
Mm. Guys are all terrible. All right, Mitch.
I'm Mitch, and I'm the only guy in the podcast. No, I have web toes. There you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I showed Ariana. She's
ew.
Yeah. Didn't
That's
I?
So much more, like, intimate than anything we said.
It is. No, because it's usually, like, my go-to fun fact, because then it really makes you think of me, and you're like, okay, he's, really, like, really offbeat.
Okay.
Well, that's true.
Well.
I feel a love.
All right, so we'll all go and see you guys next week. So maybe next week we'll do fun facts at the top of the episode so you get used to who's going to be speaking for the next hour and a half. So whoever's doing the doc next week, put a little spot in for that and we'll see if it works out. But Yeah, in the meantime, let us know if you're having trouble identifying our voices or not. I'm really shocked that you guys didn't know that me and Donya were different people, because I don't know, I can't even imagine sounding more different, but never mind. Bye to all. Until then, bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.